You're listening to the Leaping Cholla podcast, recorded in the Wrong Mountain Yurt in the Sonoran Desert.
I am falling away from this world. I am falling away from this world. You are calling me.
So we're on section 55 of Contributions to Philosophy of the Event. Reading through the text, I feel like I haven't reminded everybody yet that when we say bang, we are pronouncing B-E-Y-N-G, which is Heidegger's alternative spelling of B-E-I-N-G. And it's kind of a spatio-temporal event type of being, so it's different than B-E-I-N-G. Maybe a little more fleeting, maybe a little more phenomenal. And we're on section 55, right?
Definitely a lot cooler.
Definitely cooler than the standard being. Common cliche being.
Yeah. Yeah, let's do it. 55, resonating. Out of the plight of the forgottenness of being, the resonating of the truth of bang and of the essential occurrence itself of bang. The inception of this plight from its depth as lack of a sense of plight. The forgottenness of being does not know anything of itself. It supposes itself to be in touch with, quote, beings and with the, quote, actual and to close to, quote, life. And to be close to, quote, life.
There's no and in there, yeah.
Oh, to be, that's okay, thank you.
Why don't you start the sentence again?
Okay. The forgottenness of being does not know anything of itself. It supposes itself to be in touch with, quote, beings, with the, quote, actual, to be close to, quote, life, and to be certain of, quote, lived experience, end quote. Since the forgottenness of being knows only beings. Yet in this way, in such presencing of beings, they are abandoned by being. The abandonment by being is the ground of the forgottenness of being. The abandonment of beings by being gives them the appearance that they themselves, without needing anything else, are now there to be grasped and used. But the abandonment by being excludes and precludes the event. The resonating must sound out of this abandonment and must start with the unfolding of the forgottenness of bang, in which the other beginning resounds, and so does bang.
Yeah, I feel like that. I feel like I want to look and see if because it's weird how he switches there to.
Yeah. Right. The forgottenness of bang.
Bang.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So where are we? We're at 55?
Yeah. Forgottenness. Is that like a normal word? It's
Vergessenheit. Yeah.
Forgottenness.
Yeah, Zion's Vergessenheit. Die Seins Verlassenheit ist der Grund der Seins Vergessenheit. Ja, die Seins Verlassenheit, aber das Seinen trägt vor diesem Herr den Anschein, als sei dieses Bedürfnis, als sei Zugriff und Nutzen. Die Seins Verlassenheit, aber. Ja, it's a correct translation. It's weird the way he switches to bang there, isn't it? I guess that's what I'm saying is like. To me, it's strange that he's all like the abandonment by being, the abandonment by being, and all of a sudden he says, but the abandonment by bang, excludes and precludes the event. I mean, I think he's just switching it up. So let's look at the whole section.
Yeah, right?
Importantly here is the idea that there's a difference between being, beings, and bang. B-E-Y-N-G. So beings are the beings of the world, the things that have, things that I guess it's not quite correct.
Like nouns? Can you just say they're nouns?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Yep, yep. There, yep, person, place, or thing is a noun. So yeah, yeah. And to say that they have been abandoned by being, you know, we've heard that phrase a lot. And being is different than beings. And I think another way of saying they've been abandoned by being is they have, and he kind of says it here, they are not actual. Mm. They are not alive, and they are not really something that you can have as a lived experience, or that you can. So I'd say they're kind of they've become unreal. They've become a little bit of a fiction. Beings, that is, that have been abandoned by being. So they sort of, it's almost like saying something like, well, that doesn't have any being. Or like saying something like, that isn't real. That's a fantasy, something like that. Mm-hmm. So, out of the plight of the forgottenness of being, the resonating of the truth of bang and of the essential currents itself of a bang. So the forgottenness of being, I think another way of saying that beings that are abandoned by being, they've become perhaps a little machinated, a little bit of a shadow of themselves. They become symbols of something that doesn't, symbols that don't have any reference, perhaps. They become a dialogue or a discourse that lacks any grounding in truth or reality. So, out of the plight of this forgottenness of being is the resonating of the truth of bang, of the essential occurrence itself of bang. So,
sorry, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So, the forgottenness of being, you're saying, is similar to beings abandoned by beings?
Yes,
or is it a different idea, or is it sort of the same?
I think it's very similar. Yeah, okay, yeah. Okay. I think it's very similar. I mean, I think we've forgotten being.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the same thing as being. Beings being abandoned by being, I think so. Yeah. So in this forgottenness of being, the truth of bang resonates. So you know, you have this kind of space that's created between beings and the absence of their being, the absence of their actuality, the absence of their truth, and in that space between. Between beings that are bandied about beings, marketed beings, exchanged beings, represented beings, and the lack of their actually having being, there's a resonating, which is the truth of bang and the essential currents of bang. So there's an event in there. There's a resonating of time, space. There's a history. There's an actuality. The inception of this plight from its depth as lack of a sense. The inception of this plight from its depth as lack of a sense of plight. And we've talked about that before. The plight is a lack of a sense of plight. The forgottenness of being does not know anything of itself. So, it's self unaware. It supposes itself to be in touch with beings, with the actual, to be close to life and to be certain of lived experience. Since the forgottenness of being knows only beings. The forgottenness of being knows only beings makes sense because It interacts with the things of the world, but it has forgotten what their being is. And I think it also important to point out that, you know, Heidegger's sort of philosophical thrust was always like, we need to analyze being, how things be. And he's sort of saying here, like, you know, this assumption or this experience of being in touch with beings, being with the actual, being in life, being as a part of a lived experience, is an interaction or a world of beings in which the question of their being has not been asked and has not been analyzed. And in that lack of analysis, in that lack of awareness of being, there's a sort of vacuum or hole or absence of the core analysis that should be conducted about beings, which is, what is their being? Yet in this way, in such presencing of beings, they are abandoned by being. So, yeah. The abandonment by being is the ground of
In such presencing of beings, they are abandoned by being. So by presencing, they become abandoned.
Yeah. Okay. He's talked about presence, this constant presence of beings. And that's because, you know, I would say he kind of addresses the issue of consciousness as being overwhelmed or over-focused on presence. Mm-hmm. That as if everything is happening in a present, as if everything is present, mm-hmm. and beings are just present to us, and everything happens in an immediate present. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that's only when there's a lack of being, or they've been abandoned by being. If one begins to analyze the being of this presence and of these beings, one enters into this kind of historical, spatio-temporal analysis where not everything is present. Mm-hmm. Things exist in what Heidegger calls an ecstasis of time. Mm-hmm. So analyzing things only in their presence is kind of only getting to one side of a many-sided thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And saying you know it, even though you've only seen one side of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The abandonment by being is the ground of the forgottenness of being. So that answers the question you brought up. Are they the same thing? Well, the forgottenness of being is grounded mm-hmm. by the abandonment by being. So the reason, in a sense, for the forgottenness of being is the abandonment by being. Mm-hmm. The abandonment of beings by being, he says it very explicitly there, gives them the appearance that they themselves, without needing anything else, are now there to be grasped and used, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. But the abandonment by bang excludes and precludes the event. So there seems to be some abandoning by bang as well, mm-hmm. which excludes and precludes the event. Now, I'm not sure what that means other than, is that the event of grasping and using things, or is that just the event in general? Or is the abandonment by bang, does that run parallel to the abandonment by being? And therefore, we're kind of lacking both event and being. So we're literally sort of alienated from time, alienated from space, and alienated from being through these double abandonments. He seems to be saying that. The resonating must sound out of this abandonment. So the resonating of bang sounds out of this abandonment, and must start with the unfolding of the forgottenness of bang, and in which the other beginning resounds, and so does bang. Yeah. I don't know. It's a little abstract, but it does seem to just imply that there's these gaps, these spaces in which resonating happens, where bang and being have withdrawn and are not immediately present, mm-hmm. And are not really engaged or activated in our traffic with beings, mm-hmm. and that we've become over focused on the present and on presence as the realm of being. Mm-hmm. But in fact, being is much more than presence, mm-hmm. and might be even not be presence at all, mm-hmm. In the way that we understand presence. And mm-hmm. bang, as the event, is not a permanent, immediate presence. It's an event that comes and goes, like the passing of the gods. Like, it's a transitory, temporary occurrence. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to talk a bit more about it, but I feel like we could do that after we read.
Yeah, let's read a little more.
Yeah. Okay. Abandonment by being. What Nietzsche for the first time recognizes as nihilism, in fact, in the guise of Platonism, is in truth seen in terms of the basic question that remains foreign to him, merely the surface of the much deeper occurrence of the forgottenness of being. This forgottenness becomes more and more prominent precisely in the pursuit of an answer to the guiding question. Yet even the forgottenness of being, in each case according to how it is determined, is not the most original destiny of the first beginning. Rather, that is the abandonment by being, which perhaps was most veiled and denied by Christianity and its secularized successors. That beings can still appear as such, though the truth of being has abandoned them. Cf. the disempowerment of truth and something, no, of the, some Greek words. To what extent are beings used up when, thus abandoned by being, they appear as objects and as the, quote, in itself, end quote. Note the obviousness, flattening, and downright unrecognizability of being in the prevalent understanding of being. Are you looking at the words?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that first one is physis or phoisis, I think it's pronounced in Greece, which it means nature, or physic, material nature. And this other one is, yeah, I think that's I think that's probably best translated as mind and matter as idea.
Mind and matter.
So phoisis would be matter.
Oh, I see.
Ous, this here, I think is yeah, I think it's
mm-hmm.
I could be wrong, but I mean, I think he's essentially saying the disempowerment of certain elements of life, such as matter and mind,
right.
Being disempowered by just becoming ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So let's look at this section. What Nietzsche for the first time recognizes as nihilism, in fact, in the guise of Platonism, is in truth seen in terms of the basic question that remains foreign to him, merely the surface of the much deeper occurrence of the forgottenness of being.
So he's saying nihilism is the forgottenness of being, kind of, or no?
No. So I would say Nietzsche, from what I know, and it's been a while since I really dove into Nietzsche, but I mean, Nietzsche had a beef against Plato because of Plato's idea that kind of reality lies beyond mm-hmm. in the forms, and that this world is just a shadow,
mm-hmm.
and that the truth is an absolute distant essential world of forms. And that is, in a sense, what Nietzsche recognizes as nihilism. And nihilism is, you know, that now it's come to mean somebody who sort of doesn't have any ethics, But in fact, Nietzsche broadened the term and just related it to the idea of a general view of the world as being not what's real and not what's mm-hmm. what's essential.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of denying or nihilizing the world for the idea that there's some distant, higher, better, more formative world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Platonism, and that also obviously developed into Christianity. And that's why it says, you know, what Heidegger's saying here is Nietzsche never quite got much deeper than just that to get to the basic question.
Mm-hmm.
He just sort of remained on the surface of the much deeper occurrence of the forgottenness of being. So the forgottenness of being is what Nietzsche had a hint of, but he never really quite got there.
Mm-hmm.
So Heidegger views himself as kind of completing Nietzsche's analysis.
Mm-hmm.
This forgottenness becomes more and more prominent precisely in the pursuit of an answer to the guiding question. I believe the guiding question is, what is the truth of bang? I think.
I'd have to look back.
In the pursuit. Yeah, and which is me. Yet even the forgottenness of being, in each case according to how it is determined, is not the most original destiny of the first beginning. So the first beginning, again, is Greek metaphysics. And the forgottenness of being is not the most original destiny of that beginning. Rather, it is the abandonment by being, which perhaps was most veiled and denied by Christianity and its secularized successors.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, again, Heidegger, you know, goes in the same direction as Nietzsche, which is, you know, from Platonism to Christianity, mm-hmm. to secularized successors, what I would call liberals.
Mm-hmm.
That beings can still appear as such, though the truth of being has abandoned them. Cf. the disempowerment of, let's say, mind and matter as idea. So beings still appear, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the truth of being has abandoned them.
Mm-hmm.
So they've so in a sense, he's saying, right, mind and matter still have being. We still have thoughts. We still see things. We still mm-hmm. see space. We still interact mm-hmm. with objects. We still have representations, but it's all been disempowered mm-hmm. by sort of being turned into an idea,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
To what extent are beings used up when thus abandoned by being, they appear as objects and as the in itself? It's funny, I wasn't listening. Can you read this paragraph again? Because I wasn't listening to you, and for some reason, because I was looking up the Greek, and for some reason I need you to read it for me to really get my mind around it.
Okay, sure. To what extent are beings used up when thus abandoned by being, they appear as objects and as the, quote, in itself, end quote. Note the obviousness, flattening, and downright unrecognizability of being in the prevalent understanding of being.
Yeah, so in a sense, what he's saying is when we have this idea of objects
mm-hmm.
or beings as objects and things in themselves,
mm-hmm.
that very idea uses beings up and abandons them by being.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's pretty clearly, because by saying something is an object or saying that it is a thing itself, you kind of corner it, segregate it, delimit it,
mm-hmm.
Use it up, as Heidegger says, mm-hmm. And render it a kind of, and here he uses these words, obvious, flat, and downright unrecognizable
mm-hmm.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the bang is kind of taken out of things,
mm-hmm.
right? The event, yeah. the time-space continuum, the eventfulness of things is stripped out of them, and they're just seen as objects and things in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this the thing, the being in itself, the thing in itself, has been the great pursuit of philosophy mm-hmm. for a long time, to understand beings and what is the being in itself. Hegel, Kant, everybody sort of sought that. And Heidegger was saying kind of that's just peak abandonment by being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right. Should we try to do this last little bit to the
end? I think so. End?
Okay. Abandonment by being. What is abandoned by what? Beings by the being which belongs to them and to them alone. Beings then appear in that way, namely as objects and as things objectively present, as if being were not occurring essentially. Beings are the nondescript and the striking at the same time in the same undecidedness and arbitrariness.
Great. Yeah, I don't have anything to say about that paragraph because he just basically clarifies what I just said. Right? And that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Although I have to hear it a second time in order to understand it.
Okay, well, let's keep reading. I can go back, yeah.
The abandonment by being is basically an essential decay of being. Its essence is distorted, and only in that way does it bring itself into truth, namely as the correctness of representation. Greek word for thinking through, idea. Beings remain what is present, and what most properly is what is constantly present, and thus conditions everything. It is the unconditioned, the absolute, the ens entium, deus, etc.
Deus, a god.
Deus. Yeah. What sort of happening and of which history is this abandonment? Is there a history of being? And how seldom and how little does this history come to light in a veiled way? The abandonment by being happens to beings and indeed to beings as a whole, and thereby also to that being which, as human, stands in the midst of beings and in so doing forgets their being. Through a disclosure of the abandonment by being, the resonating of being seeks to bring back being in its full essential occurrence as event. That bringing back will happen only if, through the grounding of Dasein, beings are placed back into being as opened up in the leap.
Yeah. Pretty straightforward stuff. Should I talk through it?
Yeah.
So in this talk of abandonment, what is abandoned by what? Well, beings are abandoned by the bang which belongs to them and to them alone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Makes sense, right?
Yes.
Beings then appear in that way, meaning they appear as things abandoned by the bang that belongs mm-hmm. to them, namely as objects and as things objectively present, as if bang were not occurring essentially, right? So they, like I said, they appear as just objects in themselves in the immediate present. Mm-hmm. And we interact with them that way, and they've lost their bang. Mm-hmm. So they've kind of lost their soul. They've lost their timefulness. They've lost their dimensionality.
Yeah.
Beings are the nondescript and the striking at the same time in the same undecidedness and arbitrariness. So that's kind of beautiful, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So they're nondescript because in a sense, it's hard to differentiate them. They become similar and mundane, yet they are striking at the same time. They kind of hit us in this shallow, surprising way, in the same undecidedness and arbitrariness. It's mm-hmm. sort of in the arbitrariness and the undecisive way we interact with being.
Mm-hmm.
The abandonment by bang is basically an essential decay of bang. So it's bang, it's the essence of bang decaying away.
Mm-hmm.
Its essence is distorted, and only in that way does it bring itself into truth, namely as the correctness of representation, thinking through idea. Mm. Now that's a little odd, right?
Mm-hmm.
The abandonment by bang is basically an essential decay of bang. So I get that. Bang is decaying, so it's drifting away. Mm-hmm. Its essence is distorted. That seems to be the essential decay. And only through this distortion, in that way, does it bring itself into truth, namely as the correctness of representation.
I mean, maybe it's truth like a so-called truth, even though it's not in quotes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it would seem to line up with the correctness of representation. So
yeah.
The correctness of representation kind of replaces truth, and we become obsessed with the correctness of representation rather than truth.
And the correctness of thinking and thinking through
exactly.
An idea.
Yeah, exactly. I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
Beings, and then we get a little bit to what I said, beings remain what is present, and what most properly is what is constantly present. And thus conditions everything. It is the unconditioned, the absolute, the ens entium, deus, etc. Does that make sense? So beings are kind of just like our view of the world is that beings are present to us.
Here they are. Look at them. Yeah, yeah, it does. Yes.
And from this omnivorous presence of beings, what most properly is what is constantly present.
Right.
So only the constantly present is properly is. Mm-hmm. And thus, because it is the only thing that properly is, it conditions everything and kind of becomes the unconditioned, the absolute, the God.
Yeah.
So presence, the constant presence of beings becomes our God. Mm-hmm. What's sort of happening, and of which history is this abandonment? So how did this abandon happen? What's its history? Is there a history of Bang? Well, actually, Heidegger has a book called The History of Bang. and how seldom and how little does this history come to light in a veiled way?
Not very often. Yeah.
The abandonment by Bang happens to beings, and indeed to beings as a whole, and thereby also to that being which, as human, stands in the midst of beings and in so doing forgets their Bang. So the abandonment by Bang happens to humans as well, right?
Yeah.
Who stand in the midst of beings and forget the Bang of those beings. Through a disclosure of the abandonment by being, so through realizing and seeing that the beings have been abandoned by being, the resonating of Bang seeks to bring back Bang in its full essential occurrence as event, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That bringing back will happen only if, through the grounding of Dasein, beings are placed back into Bang as opened up in the leap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's really nice.
It is really nice. So, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I feel like all this stuff like really relates to, what is sort of, or what is incorrectly called intrusive thoughts, I guess. Like a lot of these really do.
What do you mean?
Well, the first thing there's a lot of stuff, but the first thing is just the abandonment of beings by being gives them the appearance that they themselves, without needing anything else, are now there to be grasped and used. So, I mean, I'm imagining the example we've used a number of times is like the knife on the table. And maybe it was the word grasp that got me there, but just this idea that like things are just there. They don't need their history to be considered, and they can be used in any way, any fearful way. Mm-hmm. And then I also thought, later, the sort of, again, the obviousness, the flattening, the downright unrecognizability also made me think of like just sort of these objects, which under anxiety, the thought of anxiety can become very, I guess, one-dimensional, flattening and just unrecognizable and scary and not for use what they are, take on a different thing. And then also I thought another one I thought was really interesting is the and I think you'll be able to tie them all together, but the sort of correctness of representation, so like thinking through the idea, trying to like think it through to make sense, I guess, is mm-hmm. what I was thinking. Yeah, and the
Tell me more about that last one.
You know, that's the one I haven't fully, or that's the one I haven't like, feel like I haven't quite fleshed out yet. But I think the abandonment by Bang is basically an essential decay of Bang. Its essence, so when it's abandoned, right, its essence is distorted, and only in that way, and only through distortion, can it bring itself to so-called truth, and through that, and that it does through a correctness of representation. So thinking through idea.
Yeah, I think, can I jump
yeah,
in?
Go
I mean, ahead. I think in the context of intrusive thoughts and objects and objects denuded of history, and I think this is a great paragraph, because I was going to say that sort of leads for me right into what most properly is what is constantly present and thus conditions everything. It is the unconditioned, the absolute.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think what you're getting at is that when you have an object in itself that is abandoned by Bang, it is constantly present and is imminently present. There's kind of a, as he says here, there's an absoluteness to it, an mm-hmm. unconditionedness to it.
Mm-hmm.
It is all powerful. It is immediate and in your face, and it is the only thing present. And,
mm-hmm.
and yet sort of, there's an abandonment to it. There's something has left it, and there's a ghost. There's a kind of a negative power that you still are aware of, and that's that essential decay of Bang. That still kind of lingers with the object,
mm-hmm.
As the correctness of representation. So mm-hmm. so what you then have to do with the object in itself, as you encounter it constantly, is ask yourself, how can it be correctly represented?
Mm-hmm, right.
And that comes to stand in for its truth. And so you get into, I think, where you were headed, mm-hmm. which is, you know, with intrusive thoughts, with anxiety, you get into this incessant rigmarole of trying to correctly represent things,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
understand them and think
yeah.
about them in the right way and think through them in the right way. But the problem is you're only kind of encountering them in a two-dimensional way,
mm-hmm.
and you're not actually interacting with their Bang, because they've been abandoned by Bang,
mm-hmm.
and so you're kind of spinning your tires, and you're also kind of trying to decondition something that has become unconditioned.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to yeah. relativize something that has been absoluted. You're mm-hmm. trying to humanize something that you've turned into a god.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to interact with the history of something that you have, whose history you have deleted.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, totally.
And so this is the terror of the object of anxiety. This is
yeah.
the terror of the world. This is how the world, everything in the world, all the beings of the world become terrifying,
mm-hmm.
because... and maddening, because they're terrifying, because they're objects in themselves and they're immediately present, and there's no way to kind of interact with their Bang, which mm-hmm. means you kind of have no sense of where they came from, you have no sense of where they're going, you don't know what their history is, you don't know what their essence is, you don't know what their soul is, you don't know what their reason for being is. You're just kind mm-hmm. of dealing with everything as a superficial wall of beingness. Right. And then the madness comes in when to try to figure out the truth of your situation and the truth of what you're looking at, you get into this game of the correctness of representation, how to correctly mm-hmm. represent everything, which has nothing to do with truth.
Right.
Correct representation is just a game of ideas and thinking throughs. And it's a language game. It's mm-hmm. it's a card castle. It's a game of drawing pictures to try to trying to draw ever more accurate mm-hmm. pictures mm-hmm. of something that you are not seeing fully in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Totally. Yes. Absolutely.
So I think that's where you were going with
absolutely.
That. And I think you're
so
absolutely
well
right.
Said.
I think you're absolutely right. And do you have anything more to say there?
No, I want you to keep talking.
Well, and I think that, you know, I think that what's wonderful is that we start this whole section, Abandonment by Being, with Nietzsche and Plato and a reference to Christianity mm-hmm. and its secularized successors, which I call liberalism. And you could also call it the Enlightenment and the children of the Enlightenment and all the post-Enlightenment movements and the Enlightened Ones and the Enlightening, the progressives and the progress and all that. But, you know, what you see is a thread, full thread here. So Plato,
mm-hmm.
who's really the, you know, the father of philosophy, as we've heard in these, you know, as
yeah.
we've heard. And, you know, Plato's said very specifically, the world we live in is a shadow.
Mm-hmm.
The real world is the world of forms. It lies beyond us. That becomes Christianity. This world is unreal. This world is a world of sin. This is a non-important world. This is a figment. This is sort of like a set, like Shakespeare, you know, a stage we all walk upon.
Yeah, but we're aiming for heaven.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. The reality, the creator lies beyond.
Right.
We are just the created. And so this world, and that's the, so then we get to Nietzsche, who then says that's this whole thing that we've, you know, we're talking 2,000 years after Plato, this whole thing is nihilism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a negation of the reality of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of creation of this other space that is more important, that is our objective, that is the creator space that makes everything that we live in possible. But what we live in is this kind of second level creation
mm-hmm.
That's not as important as that world. And that is nihilism.
Mm-hmm.
This world doesn't matter. The other world does matter.
Mm-hmm.
And so that becomes Christianity that Nietzsche attacks, and then its secularized successors. So what are its secularized successors? I say it's liberalism. Mm-hmm. It's the Enlightenment. I mean, that's what came after Christianity. It's secularized successors. And That's where I think we get into this kind of the world you just talked about, which mm-hmm. is the world of anxiety, the world of thinking through, mm-hmm. The world of
yeah.
correct representation, the world of imminent presence, the world of beings abandoned by being,
mm-hmm.
the world of one-dimensional, timeless, unconditioned absolute beings.
Mm-hmm.
Some people call it materialism. Some people call it contemporary culture, mm-hmm. Capitalism, whatever you want to call it. But it very much is the liberal mindset. It very much is how the liberal head views the world. And, you know, and we've talked a little bit about the symmetries between Christianity and liberalism mm-hmm. with its guilt, mm-hmm. with its utopianism, with its sense of sin, mm-hmm. with its sense of correctness, its sense of propriety, its sense of loyalty,
mm-hmm.
its resistance to questioning, its mm-hmm. dogma, mm-hmm. blah blah blah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And which, you know, kind of takes me to a few of the things that I sort of noticed this week in the news. Mm-hmm. Should I sort of bring them up? I think in terms of liberalism. I mean, I think, I guess what I want to link are some aspects of liberalism to what we just read in this section.
Mm-hmm. And to anxiety.
Well, anxiety is the result of liberalism's nihilism.
Yeah.
Anxiety is just the condition of life as a liberal.
Yeah.
Because of everything we just said, where
yeah.
to the liberal, being is abandoned. Beings are abandoned by being. Beings are abandoned by bang. Mm-hmm. Everything is immediately present. Everything is about the correct representation. Everything is about thinking through. Yeah. Everything is about the object in itself. Everything is kind of nihilistic.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really no bang to things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I want to start with what I call liberal panic. Mm-hmm. And I've seen a lot of it this week. You hear a lot of, you know, it for a while it was, say in Trump's first term, right? We got to see a side of liberalism that was kind of none of us had seen in a while, right? I mean,
yeah,
and the story I have is that, you know, after Lump got elected, Trump got elected, you know, dear friend of mine who's Jewish, really cornered me in an attic. You know, we were in an attic shooting a film, and he and my other two friends cornered me, and he was shivering with genuine fear. We're talking, this is like 4 days after Trump got elected, you know, with genuine fear that, you know, the trains were going to come and take all the Jews away. And I didn't feel that was a likelihood. I didn't feel like that was what was happening, you know, but it was hard to explain why. And there really wasn't a lot of room to, there wasn't a lot of, I wasn't really quite sure what kind of evidence or reasoning to bring forth, mm-hmm. to deflate that fear.
Yeah.
But because it was clear that it was very present, mm-hmm. very real, very all consuming,
right,
for this guy.
Right.
Now, as we know, that was 2016. Things kind of moved on, and that never happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then Trump lost, and then came back. But that thing of like that fear of the trains coming, that was just one aspect of Trump derangement syndrome and the anxiety and the fear that liberals, that just came surging out of liberals, yeah. everywhere, right?
Yeah.
But now it's surging back. It's there's just a lot. There's more fear. And you just hear people talking constantly. They're panicking. The world is going to hell. Everything's mm-hmm. falling to pieces. Who knows where this is headed?
Mm-hmm.
This is gonna. I mean, they're just trying to deport, take the green card away from some Palestinian student protester at Columbia. And you know, you hear people all not talking about how this is just the beginning of, you know, this wild descent into Trump taking over. He's a fascist. He's Hitler. He's going to take everything over. He's going to rescind all the laws, everything. I mean, it's just, you get this sense from people that they are in a state of genuine immediate panic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it's because, you know, it's not accurate at all to say this has anything to do with Trump. I think.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is just a trigger.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of these people. And frankly, a lot of things freak them out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of things cause them anxiety. A lot of things. They're prone to panic. They're prone to anxiety. They're prone to you know, hysterical concern, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's because of a lot of things we see here. You know, I think Trump is the biggest example, but Trump is incredibly, he's so present, and he's so unconditioned and so absolute. And he's so, but yet due to the way liberalism views the world, he's almost like the ultimate conclusion of hundreds of years of liberal thinking. It's almost like Trump is exactly where liberalism was headed, because he is like the devil, right? He's just come up out of the bowels of the earth,
mm-hmm.
because liberalism was getting more and more restrictive and strictured and controlling and continually forgetting being, forgetting bang, mm-hmm. continually diving further and further into a world abandoned by being and abandoned by bang, a world that was only about correct representation,
mm-hmm.
a world that was only about fictions that are supposedly lived experience, mm-hmm. a world that is only a continuation of the Platonist Christianity nihilism, mm-hmm. where the world is just kind of this senseless, scary, out of control object in itself, and the mm-hmm. only way to relieve that stress and that anxiety and that confusion is to try to control the world.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Which we see in, again, liberalism's resistance to free speech,
mm-hmm.
and to control of information, and mm-hmm. it's just an attempt to recover from this anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I'm not sure that Trump is like the ultimate object in that way, because in a way he's the ultimate not object, because that's why it breeds anxiety, or I don't know.
What I mean is, I think that, like, imagine fear has a way of creating its ultimate object.
Yeah, right.
Fear generates what it fears.
Right.
And forms the epitome of its self.
Uh-huh.
So what I mean is that in liberalism's long march over the last 300-400 years toward creating a world that is, in a sense, completely objectified, completely abandoned by being, it's flattened the world, where Heidegger mm-hmm. uses there. It's rendered the world unconditional and absolute and present to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the ultimate result of that, the ultimate inevitable result of that
mm-hmm.
is something like Trump pops up.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
Because the more you go in that direction, in that liberal direction, the more something scary is just going to continually...
Oh, okay.
Things are going to get scarier and scarier as they pop up, right?
Okay, sure.
Because in other words, here's the thing. To a liberal like me, okay?
Uh-huh.
Who's been a liberal all his life, I'm not scared of Trump at all.
Uh-huh.
Trump's not scary to me at all. Because I have... seen through liberal panic, the liberal mindset of the flatness of being, mm-hmm. and I see that, in fact, to me, Trump has not been abandoned by bang. Does that make sense?
Trump has or has.
You can only be afraid of Trump if you have no way. Here's what it is. You can only be scared shitless about Donald Trump if you have shut off your ability to analyze what his next move might be.
Mm, yeah, right.
Do you see?
Yeah.
And I see. The only way you can analyze what his next move might be
is
if you shut off that liberal wall
mm-hmm.
and start just looking without fear in a simple, cold, not cold, but just if you look at the bang of Trump.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if you look at it and you look at the whole reality,
mm-hmm.
you see that none of these extravagant fears are going to come true. And that's why I brought up my friend.
That's why I brought up
2016. What's astonishing is, All those things that everybody said for the first 4 years, none of them came true.
Mm-hmm.
And yet in this, so what you had was 4 years
mm-hmm.
of mass hysteria.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It was mass hysteria, which after 4 years, it was shown to be all false.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a fascinating historical event. Then 4 years later, the trigger of that mass hysteria comes back.
Yeah.
And so the ultimate question then is, okay, are we going to repeat the mass hysteria even though we just had 4 years of it and we saw that all of it was just false hysteria?
Yeah.
Or are we going to say, oh, we don't need to feel mass hysteria? And what's the answer? Yes, we're going to feel the mass hysteria. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's just going to be a different kind. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the situation of Jews has changed, so it's not going to be that kind, but it's going to be everybody's going to be hysterical about what Trump's going to do because they're still just in the same mindset, which is that they have turned off the cognitive faculties. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They have turned off the bang of the world, so they can't map this guy's moves. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that absolutely freaks them out. Mm-hmm. And they thought in the interim between his first and second term, they did everything in their power mm-hmm. to control, mm-hmm. regiment, and correctly format the world mm-hmm. such that he would not repeat.
Yeah. Right.
But he did.
Right.
And that has proven that their attempt to sort of control the world is always going to upend itself.
Yeah, yeah. So then how does that work for a longtime liberal like me? Who, like, I would agree with you, like, I feel similarly to how you do about Trump, but not similarly to how you do about, I guess, other kinds of anxiety. So how would you, I guess, map that? Or I don't know, so if that's how you explain Trump derangement syndrome...
Yeah, why do you feel that for certain things and not for Trump?
Yeah. Or actually, I mean, I don't really care why I do or don't feel it for Trump, but like...
Yeah, I mean, liberalism is a deep disease.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And, you know, you can think of it as an allergy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And... you're going to be allergic to some things and not others. Some people are going to be allergic to everything.
Yeah.
Their liberalism is so deep that they're allergic to everything.
Yeah.
But some people are just going to be allergic to some things. Yeah. And I think you're just still allergic to certain things.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I guess in a way we've already said that, but like, how would you... map Trump derangement syndrome onto, I guess, general anxiety.
How are they similar?
How would you parallel them? How would you,
Well, I think that's what we've been talking about. Trump is just a being.
Yeah.
He's just an object in the world. That's all he is. Mm-hmm. He's no different than the knife on the counter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's no different than the crazy neighbor that lives down the street.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He's no different than the possibility that you might get cancer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's no different than the possibility that your car might go over the line and go head on into a truck,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
or that your child might get eaten by a tiger.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's a thing.
Yeah.
That represents
right, I see.
A spectrum of possibilities. Everything represents a spectrum of possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
So Trump is more actually just like driving in traffic or just driving or having a child or having a body susceptible to disease or having a neighbor, right? Yeah. All those things could go terribly wrong.
Yes.
Okay. The difference between Trump and all these other things is he's the leader of the mightiest nation on earth. He's a very powerful person.
Mm-hmm.
His actions affect a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Your neighbor, a little more limited, right? Traffic, you've driven in traffic a lot. Everybody drives in traffic. Bad things happen, but you know it's not so domineering.
Yeah,
it's not, and it's also not so flagrant and taunting, you know, right. and arrogant. So
but it's more immediate for most
it
people.
It is. I mean, Trump offends various sensibilities in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But my point is, he's just an object that represents a set of possibilities.
Yeah.
And the way But when you've turned beings into objects in themselves, and you've mm-hmm. denuded them of bang, and denuded them of the ability to kind of experience them as historically determined events, and when you've stopped relating to them in the richness and the complexity and the stickiness of their reality in an embedded world that holds them in every direction, mm-hmm. so that their movements and their effects and their mm-hmm. results and their actual, not just their potential, but their actual actions mm-hmm. are in fact quite delimited and quite structured and mm-hmm. quite, and often mm-hmm. very quite predictable and very, and again, very conditioned, mm-hmm. very mm-hmm. relative to a history and a determinable story.
Yeah, right.
Right? When you interact with beings unabandoned by being, and you understand that when you are interacting with a being, say Trump or traffic or a neighbor or a child, when you do the Heideggerian analysis of things, and you start asking yourself, okay, it's not just a being, it's not just a flat, unconditioned, absolute present being. It's got bang. It's got history. It's got recognizable factors and determinants that I can understand it through.
Yeah.
Then you're relating to its bang, and you're being appropriated by its bang, and you're gonna understand it better.
Yeah.
Well, and you're not gonna fear it so much, because it's literally like you can't fear something if you know its next 12 moves.
Yeah, right.
You can't. If you know its next 12 moves, you literally know them, or you have a really super, super, super good reason and think you know them. And all the times you've ever made that analysis, you've been correct. So your abductive inferences are spot on.
Yeah, right.
Then you don't have reason to fear.
Yeah.
But liberals don't have that.
Right.
Because they've turned it off.
Yeah.
Now that turning off, how that's happened, that's very complicated. It's very complicated because it is liberalism itself. Liberalism is in a sense mm-hmm. the practice of continually turning that off. Mm. It's the delimitation of beings from being, the abandonment of beings by being. In order to turn them into objects in themselves.
Yeah.
And so beings become absolute and unconditioned. And then, so you get a Trump, and it's like a Wolverine in a chicken coop. It just makes everybody insane.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's, yes. Very.
And so, you know, that liberal panic I kind of wanted to bring up because I thought it kind of resonated with this passage. But I think that, you know, there was an interesting event this week where all these Democrat representatives and senators all read the same script. Like something like 27 of them put out a video, you know, and they all read the same script and they all kind of moved in the same way and did the same things. And It was widely mocked. I thought in the end it might have actually been strategic. Like they did it. And in fact, Cory Booker said, you know, big Democrat, you know, oh yeah, we did that on purpose. The views were out of, you know, off the charts, right?
Yeah.
It could be untrue, but could be true. Yeah. But to me, it highlighted the fact that, in a sense, liberalism is a script. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Why is it a script? Mm-hmm. It's a script because you're scared. Mm-hmm. And what is a script other than correct representation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Correct representation in narrative form. That's what a script is. Okay?
Yeah.
And correct representation, of course, brings us back to correctness, controlling how we speak,
right?
And it really has become a very distinct difference between the two parties in that, in my view, conservatives and Republicans really are generally about free speech, and liberals generally are not. And that's the truth. Liberals are going to try to fudge that and say, oh, yeah, but the Republicans do this, that. No, but overall, absolutely not. I completely disagree. Republicans and conservatives generally are about free speech, and liberals are not. And there's even a meme I saw. It said, the secret Republican plot to make liberals look like idiots called Operation Just Let Them Speak is working. And that's, I can say, that's literally, I think, how Republicans view it. Let the liberals speak.
Yeah, that's true. That's crazy.
And because there's a whole culture now of Republicans, conservatives, MAGAs, posting what liberals say. And in fact, when somebody like Joy Reid loses a TV show, or a liberal gets canceled, or a liberal gets, you know, a liberal show gets canceled, Republicans lament it, because they're like, damn, I loved hearing what that like. And so again, the secret Republican, this is a meme, the secret Republican plot to make liberals look like idiots called Operation Just Let Them Speak is working. Now that is exactly the opposite of the liberal approach. The liberal approach is we need to demonize, illegalize, deplatform Republicans talking. So those are two super distinct ways of looking at your political opponent speaking, right?
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
And I don't know, lastly, I just wanted to say that I was thinking again about Ukraine and Israel, you know, and I know that I've on this podcast, I've sort of said I wrestled with why I kind of felt simpatico to Israel's plight and supportive of their plight and not as supportive of Ukraine's. And I've sort of said, in a sense, I saw Russia as more of the Israel in the situation, as the cornered. Because really, actually, I mean, Russia is, in a sense, the Israel in the situation, because really, you know, if Israel faces this enemy that has, you know, a billion people, right? I mean, if Islam or Muslim, that's not really the way it works. I mean, they actually just face the Palestinians, and obviously no other Muslims are against them, but no other Muslims are with the Palestinians, or they pretend to be. But in the court of world opinion, the Israelis feel outnumbered. They feel overwhelmed. And Russia, of course, is tiny compared to Western Europe and what used to be its ally America, you know. So, but be that as it may, there's really no, you can't just map one situation onto the other. That's false reasoning. But I will say, I've always had this sense, and as you know, I have a friend who is the most ardent Ukraine supporter that I know. He lives in Ukraine. He's an American who moved to Ukraine, has made his life there, and made a very famous documentary about the revolution in 2014 that kicked out the Russian leader and fomented the contemporary Ukrainian political culture that then brought the country into war, right? I mean, we know. Meaning, his reaction to the war gave birth to this thought that I'm about to express. You know, and his reaction was that he had been advocating for rabidly for Ukrainian independence and Ukraine's fight against the Russians, but as soon as the war happened, he fled. Okay, he left the country. And cheered from afar. And this really got to me. And so, again, this week, lastly, I'll cut short. You know, I realized that, you know, and I used to say this to him. I said, you know, I think I want to try to push us to a cognizance of war and an age of thinking about war where it's super hyper personal how we think about war. And what did I mean? I meant that. And here's what it is. If Israel This is just, these are, it's hypothetical. If Israel was falling, like those 10 million people, right?
Mm-hmm.
The war was not going in their direction.
Mm-hmm.
Shit's getting bad.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I feel in my heart kind of that I and my children, I would support us joining the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Could I? I mean, it's all these practicalities, but I would feel like this is a battle that I'm willing to actually undergo.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is a tragedy that I'm willing to risk my life and the life of my children for.
Mm-hmm.
That these 10 million people are about to be marched into the sea and eradicated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then I thought about Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear so much about support for Ukraine. And I have to say, if Russia was going in and Russia was taking over Ukraine, if they actually got Kiev and they actually said, that's it, Ukraine, you're part of Russia now, you know what I mean? My reaction would be, sorry, I guess you can't join NATO.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wouldn't risk my life or the life of my children for the idea that Ukraine should join NATO.
Yeah.
Whereas I might for the idea that Israel should be allowed to exist.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they're very different things for me.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's kind of, I think, what I hear a lot of people saying about this support for Ukraine. That it's just easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to do from your computer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, as a lot of people say, did you know the Ukrainian Foreign Legion? Did you know this? The Ukrainian Foreign Legion openly advertises that anyone between the age of 18 and 60
mm-hmm.
can go join the fight.
Oh, yeah. Wow. How many people have come?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you should grok it, but, you know, not that many.
Yeah.
And again, Ukraine has lost a quarter of its population.
That's insane.
Now, again,
I just heard that.
I know you heard that, but that's
oh,
not,
right, but you're right.
Understand,
some people
that's not
leave.
To death.
Right.
A lot of Ukrainians have died, but a quarter of the population has fled the country.
Yeah, even though they have closed borders.
So yeah, I mean, some of them fled before and some of them snuck through. But imagine that. Imagine America is in this war that everyone is just like, this is the war, right? Mm-hmm. There's 380 million Americans, whatever it is.
Yeah.
100 million Americans leave the country.
Yeah.
And they so badly don't want to be involved in this fucking mess.
Yeah, yeah.
What kind of war is that?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. I was just kind of thinking, you know, it's really, I think everybody can have different opinions about these battles. But I just wanted to say, I think ultimately it's really important to think about them in terms of what you would actually be willing to do. Oh, you know, opposed to a quarter of you know, Ukrainians leaving the country for this, what is apparently the fight for Ukraine, right?
Right.
Israel's population has remained completely stable. It's not like Israelis are fleeing the country because now there's a war.
Yeah, yeah.
Israel doesn't have a recruitment problem.
Yeah.
Israel doesn't have will our citizens stand up and fight for our country? They're just completely different.
Yeah.
Fights.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
But I think bringing it back to liberalism, it's like they look at Ukraine without bang. Ukraine is being abandoned by being.
Mm-hmm.
Ukraine is a being abandoned by being. They don't look at the story. They're not interested in the story of how it got there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a symbol and it's just a cause, and it's a and the correct representation of it is as a do or die cause. Which really, it's do or die only in the sense that other people should be doing it and I and dying for it, and I'm not going to do it or die for it.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Yeah. So it's gross.
Yeah.
It's fucking gross. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. Well, it reminds me, you brought up, I think, the, you know, the motto from the land to the sea. What is it?
What's yes. that? From the river to the
river
sea.
To the sea. And the, like, that just makes me think of the script and being like the doing it, the do and dying, like the just believing so fully in a script like that. When you, if you actually think about what that means, you're like, wow, that's a pretty, that's not a light thing to be saying.
It's not a light thing.
It means you're getting rid of a country.
You are. You're exterminating 10 million people. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, I was just, sorry, I was just hooking on that because of the idea of the script and there being a right way to say it and,
Right.
The correctness. Anyways, I think I don't have anything more to say.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like we would if we it wasn't so late, but it was a lot of really interesting things.
I mean, it's been a long show. The audience is exhausted. They've probably all gone home. And we're shouting into the darkness. No,
it was super. That was super interesting.
Very good. Very good reading.
Yeah.
And
good night.
Yeah. Good night.
Thanks for joining us for the Leaping Cholla podcast. For more information, visit leapingcholla.com and be sure and follow us on socials. Until next time.